Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's move over to another topic here, another case. The autopsy is out. The charges are filed. And what came out of that courtroom on the one-year anniversary of the last day of Celeste Rivas Hernandez was seen alive. It's worse than most people were prepared for. Prosecutors say they've got 40 terabytes of evidence, a wiretap nobody knew about, three separate grand juries, and exploitation material found directly on his phone. His defense team response, speed it up, step on the gas, show us everything. And the question that won't leave me alone, the one that I think you might be sitting with too, is what were all the adults doing for 12 months between when this child vanished and when someone finally smelled something wrong in a tow yard? Your questions on Substack, on YouTube, drop them. We're going to try and get through them as we look at the David case. Let's start here, Robin. His lawyers are demanding a faster hearing. Strategy. Some people waive the right to speedy. Some are like, let's step on the gas for different reasons. 40 terabytes they haven't apparently seen yet. What do they know that we don't, that they're wanting this to move really fast?
You know, this is such a Bob question.
It is. I mean, it is, but I'm curious to get your conjecture on it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, I looked up, there's a lot of legal reasons for this that it's definitely unprecedented. Typically, they don't do this fast. They don't want to move this fast. Mm-hmm. But there's one theory that I kind of have in my mind. Again, you place yourself in that situation. And so I'm going to answer from a behavioral standpoint, not from a Bob Mata legal standpoint or our good friend Eric on the prosecution side as well. I think there's so much uh-ohs that have just happened with the release of the autopsy result and the terabytes and what we're seeing for child's S things on his cell phone and things like that. The faster they move, the less that's known in the media. I think it's really about trying to negate or at least lessen the huge negative impact or conjecture and all these things that are coming out. So let's move fast before people see even more. I really think that's part of it because there is, with that much, think about that, terabytes of information, and none of it is any good. None of it's going to be to his benefit. So if you want to not give people time to digest that much data, let's quickly move so you don't get to see that much data, and let's try to get this thing moving. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, we don't, not diagnosing him innocent until proven guilty, in our opinion, blah, 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 allegedly put that in front of everything. The narcissists don't like their masks slipping. And if David is a narcissist, which it kind of appears that he may be, he seems to have some of the traits, the last thing they want is exposure. And I mean, this is why we've seen so many cases where we get right up to trial and they're professing their innocence right up into the, and then suddenly it's like, oh, guess what? It's showtime. Here comes a spotlight. It's about to shift onto you. I did it. Shut the show down.
Ew. Yeah. AKA Rex Heuermann.
Rex Heuermann, Brian Koberger. I mean, we see it in a lot of cases like
control, that. Control, control,
control. 1,000%. And if that's, and they will exercise any monochrome of control that they can get, because that's big to them. That's all they have left. So it's going to be a big deal, and they're going to go in at full force. So I'm thinking you're right. I think that's probably some level of this. The less that can just linger out there into the ether, the better. But at the end of the day here, I mean, sorry, this shit's going to linger out there forever. Yeah. This is part of the record.
and I think as soon as, I think part of the strategy too, again, we're going to make our list for Bob tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think part of the strategy here could also be for the defense to get all the information for discovery as fast as they can before the media gets it, so they can make their determination as fast as possible and put a plea deal together. I think, you know, I know Bob said it last week and the week before as well. I'm leaning on, with this much information, with this many bad things going on, I I can't imagine it going to trial. I mean, and again, but you never know on these things. But there's so much information, it looks like. And I think in order for to keep control of the narrative, to actually have any potential for a plea deal of any site, I think that's why. I think they just want to move to that as fast as possible so they can actually have a good choice about how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like where we're going to go here is, and this is just my non-legal expertise. My legal expertise comes from talking to Bob a lot.
Right, I know we're channeling our inner Bob.
Yeah, so that's what that, my gut on it is we're looking at a situation here where death could possibly be on the table.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that might be the only, that's the only, you know, piece that he has on the board to play with anymore is, okay, plead out and we're not going to try you for the death penalty.
Yep.
And you're going to be gone forever, but at least you won't die.
That's the route I'm going to. That's why you and I are aligned, but we'll assault Bob with it tomorrow.
Okay.
Odd question for you guys. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, Todd.
Will he, you know, it seems like there's some dark stuff in this kid's mind, right?
Yeah.
Would he enjoy the death penalty?
Oh, God. Like the process, like being on death row, like going for the ride, essentially?
Because that's a long stretch, right? Yeah. That's a long stretch of time.
So it looked like his music videos, very macabre.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a really interesting question. It's really interesting because, I mean, you know, he's going to be creating art around all these things because he's all about the dark imagery. So he's going to be using something with it. I'd be really curious about, and again, now we'll shift on to Siobhan on Wednesday. I wonder about his, because people like this have a lot of suicidal idealization a lot of times too. I'd say if he had a suicidal idealization, he might be willing to go down that route. But if he sees himself as the martyred artist behind bars, I think it also be interesting too. Is there a Son of Sam law where he's being convicted? Because he could really profit handsomely behind. I mean, think about the following he has.
And I think there is. I mean, it's California. I mean, there is some, whether it's called Son of Sam there, I don't know, but there's something in place.
Right. So he can't profit from, he can't take the proceeds from anything. So I think all those things are what the defense is going to weigh in on that. But really good insight and question, Todd.
I mean, we kind of thought that way about Koberger a little bit too. Like, is he enjoying the ride here? Is this part of what he wanted? But he didn't go for the whole trial. That would be part of the ride, I would think. If you did this, you'd want to go on. But I don't know. I mean, they can kind of pick and choose where they want to use their fast pass, if you will.
And that'll definitely play in. You know, so if he wants to go full trial, knowing he's going to get convicted anyway, again, I always just keep coming back to Taylor Swift using her real life for all their song lyrics. You know, and he's doing the same thing. I mean, he's using his real life, his real horrendously dark, evil life for his art. And so going through the trial. So I think if he wants to not share with the world the things he did and things he did to others, he would control it and plea out. But if he's proud of it, if he thinks it's part of his narrative of how he's living his life, he wants it exposed. So I think the plea, if he pleads or not, will be really telling on all that.
I think this is an interesting question here, and I want to give a quick answer before I toss it to you after I read it. They say this is from Steph via something. Where is it? This is from email. They said financial gain as a special circumstances. They're saying he allegedly ended a child's life to protect a music career. This is a line that gets me. How does a person get that far gone? And I think a lot of people are wondering that. How are you that far gone? How do you get that far gone? It's hard to get that far gone if you were never there to begin with. and I think that's something that we forget, especially with some of these cases where they're this young. I mean, I know he's like, 21 now or something? This like 19 is earlier. So he was still a damn kid. He wasn't there. You can't get gone if you were never there. If you've just developed into this and you've had an ecosystem that has allowed you to become this, you were never gone. You're just functioning as you've been essentially bred, as you've been raised, as you've been conditioned, if you will, by your thinking, by your surroundings, you know, by a lot of different things. I don't know that some of these people were ever there to get gone. I don't know. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think he was ever there either. So think about, so let's do our thought experiment right here. So here's someone that had a lot of early success before the prefrontal cortex fully formed, before the age of 24, which means we're highly emotionally impulsive. We're not really clear thinkers on things. And he had zero guardrails. Even though he comes from apparently a religious family, he didn't appear to have any guardrails whatsoever about what he could or couldn't do. He had all the wealth he needed to do whatever he wanted to do. He attracted more nutters around him, all before their prefrontal cortexes and lobes are fully formed. So they're all completely batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. And no guardrails. And then you have proclivity for doing horrendous things to underage people.
Yeah.
It was never there. I don't think there was a semblance of healthy thoughts that was in his life to that point. Before we saw the or started hearing some of the discovery stuff, I was on the camp. This human being couldn't possibly have done anything horrendous. It must have been a mistake, a cover-up. Again, prefrontal cortex not fully formed. You have a panic escalation to try to do something because you're mistaken, whether it's a drug overdose or doing stupid partying, whatever it was, and she died accidentally. Nope. I don't think that... I'm all on board with just broken from the beginning, no guardrails, and bad crap really happened.
There is a question here in the comments I wanted to go back to. It's about Celeste's parents.
I just did even more research on them too. A lot of people knew about David and Celeste's family.
This is one, and I'm not going down the road that they were paid or anything like that. But it says, yeah, so strange with Celeste's parents. She knew where she was. We don't know for sure, but they had listed her as missing. But it does seem a lot of people knew where the hell she was. She wasn't like missing in like the sense of she's on the side of a milk carton. Oh my gosh, where did she go? Like she was coming and going from the family dynamics here. Pretty much up towards the end.
Right.
Maybe not in a trunk or a Tesla. They let their little girl essentially live with a grown man. Why didn't they call the cops? Getting money? Maybe that's the question. And I'm not saying that. I'm not insinuating that. I think it's a fair question to ask. I think all that needs to be looked into, and I hope they already have. But yeah, I'm not in the camp here of just giving Celeste's parents a free pass here either. I know they're grieving. I know this is horrendous. I cannot imagine going through it, but there is responsibility to be had when you're a parent of a 13-year-old girl. She's not an adult, and sometimes you have to be a parent. I don't give a flying fuck how much you're working, how much you have to do this, how much you have to do that. Your number one priority is your child, and clearly by seeing the way the dynamics of this family worked, that child was not the number one priority, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
I agree. At the same time, This part confuses me, believe it or not. I keep all my research, and I literally before we came on, I researched her parents again, what they did, what they didn't do. I see the comments right here. The PI's evidence that her family knew where she was. Okay, maybe. There's so much that you and I wouldn't do, but
yeah.
But I'm gonna pull the Bob Mata on this one. Where okay. But we don't know them.
We don't.
And so I don't want to cast shade if they did do all what I read. I mean, it says here that they were in contact with police a lot trying to find her. But at the same time, to everyone else's point, everyone else seemed to know where she was.
She's showing up on security camera footage. She's showing up on video. It's not, again, she's not milk carton missing.
I don't get it. I mean, that's what I mean. I don't get it. Here's what I would expect. I would expect if they didn't give a rat's ass that there'd be one police report and not another. But we have multiples.
Mm-hmm.
But not multiples with tons of follow-up, it looks like. I mean, just like, see what I mean? It's just,
I think they gave a rat's ass to a certain extent.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of like being on a spectrum. I think you have you and me and all our followers obviously getting a rat's ass, which is way up here. And then you have their family, which wasn't down at zero, but maybe like right around 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. I don't know.
The other area of this that I don't have the answer to that I think would tell us a lot about it is, and I'm just going to be very blunt about it, she was a missing brown girl. And we know how that works.
I think that plays into it.
In a lot of cases where if she's a missing white blonde girl, whoa, well, there you go. You're, you know, headline story for Ashley Banfield. But on something like this, and I'm not casting dispersions on Ashley Banfield. I'm just saying that's, you know, how that sort of shit works in terms of where attention seems to go. And even deeper, what people click on. People always ask, why do they only cover this? Why do they cover that? Because guess what? The public's interest, if we put out two different videos tomorrow,
totally
one
agree.
Was about this, one was about that. And I'm going to say, I really hope this one over here that's much worse about the little brown girl gets a lot more attention. Guess what's going to get more attention? Not that one. And that's not me. That's not you. That's society. That's the world doing what they do, making bad choices and not prioritizing every human as being on the same playing field. And that's shitty, but it is the world we live in. But I do wonder how much of that played into this in terms of the police response, the police investigation, before you got the rest of the world with talking about this, the podcasting, the news coverage of all of that, when she was missing for all of that time. Before this murder took place, we didn't hear about it. We didn't really know this little girl was missing or that there was a connection to this star. None of that was a story. I'm kind of thinking it might have been if there was a little blonde white girl that had been hanging out with the music artist and then suddenly she's missing. That probably would have been a story. But for whatever reason, it wasn't. And I question, and I don't know the answer to this, but I do wonder what the response was from authorities of like, she's just a runaway. And it was just being handled like they do the other hundreds of thousands of runaway cases of, well, we hope she shows back up. Good luck.
So I definitely think that was part of it. We've seen it in too many cases for it to not be part of it. But I think it's one of a couple data points probably that led to this being the way it was. So you have that as a data point. Then I think also when you have private investigators or when you have people knowing where she is, and when whether the family knew directly or a 1 degree separation told the family, well, she's hanging out with this guy, David, who's this music guy, he's got a lot of money. And if you've got a chaotic life at home and you're dealing with a lot of chaos and trauma, and you know that one of your kids is not here, but I hear from the grapevine she's fine. You can rationalize not doing more about it. Again, pure conjecture, pure hypothesis. Mm-hmm. But when you put all these things together, cops aren't paying attention to it because it is what it is.
Yeah.
Then you have no pressing from the parents because we don't know what the cops knew about where she was or not, because they could have said the same thing. They said, well, if she's over here, because remember, everyone's always working with bandwidth. So here you have thousands of missing kids claimed, thousands. And you happen to know that the majority of the ones that are going missing, they're about to be trafficked. And you have one that's reported missing, but we know she's over here with this dude, where with limited bandwidth as a law enforcement professional, where are you going to focus? Where's the family going to focus? See what I mean? So it's I believe that probably too many people thought she was safe where she was when she actually wasn't.
It's a lot of looking back and coulda, shoulda, woulda, it feels 100%. Like in this case. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I don't know. I'm willing to hear anything in this case about how all of these things worked. I do not know the answers to these questions, but I think they need to be asked about the responsibility and what roles people were playing at what time in Celeste's life, or what they were not playing a role in where they should have been. These are fair questions.
And I'm still more on his parents
all
as
of
well.
Every damn one of them.
100%.
Every damn one of
because
them.
Because they're all underage.
Yeah, well, they were. Yeah, I mean, David was 9 at a time. He was, yes.
I know legally we've got that whole 18-year-old thing, but anyone old under the age of 24, I think, is an underage moron.
I agree.
Or potentially.
Mentally, to be there as a responsible parent, yes. This is a bad recipe. The whole damn thing is a bad recipe.
Yeah.
Young fame, suddenly falling into money, the shelter, the religiosity, the situation of Celeste. I mean, everything is a bad. The whole damn recipe is shit. And when you mix all that together, you get something like this. And I think that's where we're at. Again,
Another
your thoughts...
Soup.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work our way through it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.